The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Sunday, so it's time for the Limeys with a show entitled Fagging. So let's get going. Let's timestamp the show. It is 10:01 a.m. here in the UK this Sunday, December the 15th, 2024. A few live listeners out there on radiosoapbox.com. Today's show image and show title both relate to the practice of fagging, which I will get into later on in the topic section of the show. Okay, so I just want to draw your attention to today's traditional Christian message entitled The Parables of Jesus 8, Growth of Seed, the Growing Seed, which is a 4-minute message that is now available on achshow.com. Okay, so let's have a look at today's top story, in the UK at least. Here is today's front page headline from the Daily Star Sunday: A Room with a Woo. And this is because, according to the article, BBC's Homes Under the Hammer presenter Martin Roberts encountered a haunted house whilst filming a recent episode, when basically a light bulb mysteriously broke and fell in one of the rooms of the house. And probably of greater interest, the top headline on the Daily Mail website when I clicked on it at 8:21 a.m. this morning was: Trump insider claims drones are part of government's Project Bluebeam. The coming days will not be good. And the advisor was, or insider was, Charlie Kirk, who I've not read very good things about in the independent media. Let me just check and see if that is still the top headline on the Daily Mail website. Yeah, it still is at, just after 10 a.m. here UK time. So just throw in here a couple of things. The channel that's been following this the most is Richie from Boston, and you can find his channel on bitchute.com. There's been weeks where he might do one video, but he's been doing them almost every day and following. I mean, I woke up this morning and there's one from the 13th and one from the 14th, so I downloaded both of them because they're quite interesting. And he's not a big pusher of sponsorship, but there's one thing that he mentions every so often, and that's his Richie Likes Gold channel. So he hasn't mentioned that in episodes for a long while, so he's like really into this sort of stuff, I think. So that's kind of grabbed him. And if it's something of interest to you, the Daily Mail are picking it up as well as their main headline, then you might want to go to the Richie from Boston channel. And the last two ones are called, what we got here, so the first one, one from yesterday, AI is indeed running the drone show, but it gets worse. And then the one from the day before, which is the 13th, times is short, they aren't going to stop, PSYOPs come before the war. Okay, so that's the one I'm listening to at the moment, the one from the 13th. And the other show to look out for those of you who miss Maleficus, as a co-host on the line, is he actually filled in for Frederick C. Blackburn on the Saturday Snack Shack alongside Patrick Chenal, who is a host on paulenglishlive.com. So they are together for a show that only went out a few hours ago in America, and you can find it on republicbroadcastingarchives.org, I believe is the website, so you can go over there, download it. I already have. I've got a few things to listen to. I'm going to listen to that after I've heard the two Richie from Boston's, and of course there's Dennis Fetcho's show. And finally, the Eyes is Watching broadcast dropped after getting on for a couple of weeks, so that took a while for Steve to put together, but I've been listening to those and they tend to be rather good. So you get that from the Eyes is Watching BitChute channel, just Eyes is Watching, one word without the G on the end. And the Dennis Fetcho show, grizzom.blogspot.org, that's grizzom.blogspot.org. I generally run through all the I need to plug this because some people only listen to the Limey show, some people only listen to Saturday's I'm Talking to You show. The Saturday show, I go through all the independent radio shows I've listened to over the previous week that I think were worth listening to and give you the details of where you can find them. And then I run through the independent news websites, a few different bits and pieces from there. And I finish off with the beforeitsnews.com top 10, because their articles are ranked in order of the most popular being the most clicked on, and then it goes down from there. So I just do the top 10. So that essentially focuses on independent media, alternative media, whatever you want to call it, whereas the Limey show focuses more on the mainstream media. Okay, but so if you haven't heard the I'm Talking to You show, please go over to achshow.com and download it. I generally release it early UK time, you know, 8-9 o'clock by then AM UK time every Saturday, and it's recorded as well. So I don't do it live, but I record it and then I upload it, and then I post it on the website. So it's almost live, if you get my meaning. If I was to go live, I'd have to, like this show, have to be at a certain place at a certain time on a Saturday, and I don't want to be. You know, I'll get this done when I get it done. Sometimes it's earlier than other times, but generally it's all done by 9 o'clock, because I'm up early, as they say, and I spend most of my week literally writing material for this show and for that show. And then the other shows I do are the traditional Christian message, which is very short, 4 minutes this week, and the Dr. Peter Hammond show, which will be returning this Tuesday, and he does all the work for that. So please give them a listen if you've not before. It may be something that you're interested in, or it may not. But that being said, let's carry on. Where are we going next? Ah, yes. Whilst in the... before we do, before I started this show, I started watching a film, and I'll finish it later today. What was it, an hour and 46 minutes, and I've just watched 16 of them. It's called Elysium, and it's was made in 2013. It was set in the future, and being as the lead character played by Matt Damon is covered in tattoos, I think the producers were remarkably accurate in their predictions for the future. So if that's any good, I'll report back on it next week. As you know, my film reviews tend to cover things that were released decades before that I never got round to watching. There's nothing worth watching, in my opinion, from 2014 onwards. The only thing that jumps to mind is maybe The Irishman, the Martin Scorsese film, but if you haven't had the privilege of spending nearly £30 on buying a Blu-ray copy of Killers of the Flower Moon from Italy, I wouldn't bother, and I wouldn't even recommend that if someone gave you a free link to watch it. I was disappointed. You may like it, but if I knew what I knew now, I've not gone back to it. I've only watched it that one time. So I maintain my principle that from around the 2014 mark, things went downhill. There was even a show in the UK, and it was really promoted on the BBC website. It was called Line of Duty. It was police procedural. And I actually saw a sealed copy of the first two series. So it's like new, sealed up, for £1 in a charity shop. Might have even been 50p. And I just looked at it and I could see the way the cast was made up. It was BBC. I think it was 2014. And even a bargain. I thought, no, I know what this is really going to be about. I'm you know, once bitten, twice shy with these people. So I'll get a proper police procedural that was made before the wokery. And even then, you look at things like Law and Order, they're a lot more covert how they do it, but they're still doing it. And I've still seen elements of that going back to some of the 70s shows, like Starsky and Hutch, The Streets of San Francisco, Kojak. Again, not the further back you go, the less it is in there. But they never miss a trick. Don't forget that All in the Family was early 70s, and that was admitted by the creator, who, of course, bought the idea from the Alf Garnett show over here in the UK and created Archie Bunker. Norman Lear, struggling with his name, basically said it was used to project his beliefs onto society through a comedy. In the same way, I got very close to watching The Twilight Zone, buying that. But there's some very interesting stories from the guy, Rod Serling, behind The Twilight Zone. And as soon as I sort of looked into him and his beliefs and how he used the show to get his own political bias out to people disguised as science fiction, I thought, I'm not going to go near that ever again. The episode We Serve Humans is worth watching. You can find that online. That is just so good. I'm not going to get into it, but it's black and white, and it's actually got the Richard Kiel, who played Jaws in the Bond films, in it. But it's just an amazing story. I didn't work it out. There's a twist at the end, you know, those sorts of things. And so if you haven't seen that, give that a watch. But that's the only one I can recommend. And I did actually watch 6 or 7. And the black and white thing, you know, I know it's basic, but if it's science fiction, if it's set in the future, why is it in black and white? You know what I mean? We've had colour in the late 1960s. Batman went in colour in, what, 67, 68? So when you get something that's supposed to be set in the future in black and white, it don't work, as far as I'm concerned. That's just like the no-no straight away. They should have been colourising them long before they ruined the Laurel and Hardy films by colourising those. But, yeah, as I say, any science fiction, for me, just dive into The X-Files for a second time. I was actually looking at the first few seasons of those, because seeing if I could actually start watching it again, and actually seeing something that I might not remember too well. But I was looking through them this morning, and I went through the Wikipedia episode guides, and I'm up to season 5. I'll have a look at that. But 1 to 4, I know I'm back to front. And I know what the ones that I like, I remember so well that it's just not worth watching them again. Okay, so let's move on to our next section. Whilst in the UK, more and more people are frightened of expressing their opinions in real life or online in case they end up in jail. Let's look at what's been going on in the UK legal system in the past week, and in particular, some of the people who avoided jail recently, presumably because they presented a lesser risk to the public than those expressing opinions that the authorities do not like. First up, Daily Mail, over 25 cops sacked or disciplined for having sex while they were on duty. Next, Stoke-on-Trent Live, ex-Staffordshire police officer avoids jail for abhorrent child sex offence. Then we've got the Greenock Telegraph, Greenock man spared jail after sending sexual texts to teens. Edinburgh News, Edinburgh crime, drug dealer caught smuggling £90,000 worth of cannabis in suitcase at Edinburgh airport avoids jail. And then we've got the Daily Mail. Neighbour from hell, who wrongly accused one local of being a paedophile, made homophobic slur to another, then sprayed grass boy on another resident's lawn, is spared jail because of his mental health. Does anybody know what a grass boy is? Only I never got round to looking it up. I just couldn't be bothered. And the choice between looking that up and looking up the X-Files episode guides, I preferred the X-Files episode guides, to be quite honest with you. And then we've got Aberdeen Live. Aberdeen man who taught relatives home while he was still inside, avoids jail. Aberdeen man who taught relatives home while he was still inside avoids jail. Then we've got the Lynx Online. Lincoln teenager who took part in a robbery at a Bourne family home has been spared jail. Manchester Evening News. Stalker marched back to prison just weeks after being released on licence. Yes, licenses don't seem to work for some people. I'm surprised they haven't tried them on people who have just said something the authorities like. But of course, they're definitely not worth testing it out on them. Then we've got The Telegraph. Son of crime boss avoids jail after admitting role in arms cash plot to get father lighter sentence. The Daily Record. Johnstone thug arrested 6 hours after being released from jail after blood attack. And apparently he cut himself on some paint can or something and he tried spraying his blood at officers, which is pretty revolting, isn't it? But there you go. Then we've got the Bucks Free Press. Aylesbury woman avoids jail despite setting flat on fire. So that's the second arson one this week, as I've mentioned in the past. Arson is on the statute books as carrying up to life imprisonment. And these people are, you know, not even going to jail for a day for something that carries that length. But if somebody says something the authorities do not like, they don't hesitate to put them in jail. That should tell you exactly the nature of this government that we've got in power. And only in this first 16 and a half minutes of this Elysium film, the Matt Damon character, he is assaulted by a couple of police officers, which are all mechanised robots. Sound familiar, anybody? And then he tries to explain that this was... he hadn't done anything and what have you. He's on parole anyway. And he has to sit down with this parole officer, which is another robot. And the parole officer just says, right, 8 months added to parole. And he tries to say something. The parole officer says, it is an offence to give any abusive or negative answers to a parole officer. All this sort of stuff. And in the end, he just has to hold his hands back. And this is where the elites already are. I'll give you an example. Anyone who's lost their PayPal account has tried to go to PayPal. Is there a number? Can we talk about this? No, you can't. What do you mean, community standards? Well, yeah, we're not discussing them. We've just told you your account's gone because of that. We don't talk about it. We don't negotiate. We don't explain. We don't have to. So that is the same as what's going on there. And that's where they're going to go here. That's the whole idea of it. In the end, you're going to have... you won't have a problem with violent people on the streets because they will just wipe them out. But they need them around now, let out, so that people are scared of speaking out, because this is still a transitional period for them, that they worry that they could, if you know, in fact be challenged. And I'll give you an example. This peculiar story of that so-called CEO being assassinated in America. There's been all these you know, online support of him, etc., etc. And I saw a BBC article I mentioned on yesterday's I'm Talking to You show, where people, these elites are getting really worried because, of course, their plan is you will own nothing, you will be happy. That's not a conspiracy theory. That is what the World Economic Forum said. So essentially, all these people want to own everything and you're not going to own anything. And suddenly, one of these elites has been killed and people have been saying, you know, these elites, they've been challenging them. They can't have that. Goes against what their long-term plans are. So then you see the mainstream media kicking into high gear. And what was some other expression I heard from somebody, some governor? Violence is no solution to, you know, a grievance. We can't have that. Well, okay, if that's the reason, if that's your argument, then why do governments turn around to nations and say, if you don't do what we tell you, then we'll blow the hell out of you? But again, you see, it's one rule for them, but a different rule for the rest of you, because they want to be able to destroy whoever they want to destroy, even if it's part of a script. But they cannot have any opportunity of you destroying them, because there's a lot more of you than there are of them. And this is why it was interesting to see that BBC article about this thing and this worry of the support that this guy was getting online. I've also heard someone phoned into Jeff Rent's call-in show and said that this guy's family were part of some elite family in their area. I think it might have been Pennsylvania. Somehow linked up with the Pelosi family. And, you know, this CEO was going to actually be... He was going to reveal some insider trading involving these people, and that was why he was taken out. Other people are saying that the guy who was photographed doing the assassination doesn't look one bit like the guy that they've arrested. So it's all a very murky mess. But any of you following that story, I just thought it was throwing that one in there. Okay, so then we've got the Daily Record, Barhead Man. That's a place by the looks of it. Barhead, one word. Barhead Man avoids jail after meat cleaver attack. Delightful. Then we've got the Daily Mail. Animal rights protesters who destroyed £1,000 worth of Selfridges cheese and poured 19 bottles of milk on Fortnum and Mason's carpet avoid jail. And this was apparently part of a dairy industry protest, which is a new one on me. Then we've got the Swindon Advertiser. Swindon man spared jail after leaving wife with 37 bruises. The Telegraph, child sex offenders and burglars spared jail despite dozens of previous convictions. And finally, Daily Mail, Labour admits prisons could still run out of space despite £10 billion plans to build 14,000 more jail spaces and hand out more community sentences. Okay, next, one of the best television programmes ever made in the UK is a comedy drama called Minder, about the London criminal underworld in the 1980s. My father loved it, I love it, and so on Thursday I watched one of the best episodes of it ever, entitled Get Daily, which is a play on the film Get Carter. It contains a fair bit of Cockney rhyming slang, some of you may work out, but you can look up the words you don't on cockneyrhymingslang.co.uk, the link to which I will include in the post for this show. I'll start you off though, in the scene early on, when they are going into the hospital, and one of them says plate or plates. It comes from plates of meat, which means feet. So you'll have the website to look the words up on, and you'll also have the link to the YouTube video of the episode, which was from the fourth series of the show that originally aired in 1983, 41 years ago. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And I started looking back on things, and something like this, as I say, The X-Files, I wanted to look at again, but know them too well. And I still had a piece of paper in there. I'd already started watching them again. I was up to something like episode 6 in series 1. I watched a couple this week, plus the Get Daily one, which I always remember as one of the best. The two I saw were pretty good as well from series 1, so that's on the shelf, and that's something that when I have time I'm going to watch bits and pieces of, just an episode at a time. And I didn't remember what happened in either of them, so one of them vaguely. But it's one of those things that, because all the different, the comedy aspects in it, you might remember, say, a plot line, but I don't know it that well, probably only ever seen it once or twice maybe, that I remember all the sort of comedy banter in it, so that was pretty fresh and well worth a watch. And also, if you are in the UK, you know, would have to have been living in a hole if you were similar age to me not to have heard of Minder. Minder was released by Network DVD, and Network DVD was a wonderful company. I have one gripe about them, and the gripe is that they rather cleverly would never allow rental licenses for their DVDs. So if you were like a member of Love Film, something like that, and you used to get the DVDs, even Netflix, because Netflix started off by posting DVDs to your house, you know what I mean? But you could never get any of theirs because they wouldn't give them a rental license, because unfortunately, it's sad to say this, but most of the time, when you think, oh, there was that show from the 60s or the 70s, oh, I really loved that show, it was brilliant, and then you go and buy it, and actually it's dated, or it's not how you remember it, or anything like that. It's just not there. And I think that they knew that. And so if you just gave a load of rental licences, people would just check it out, and actually, yeah, it's not how I remember it, I won't bother with that. But if people have to buy it, then you're generating the income. But long term it didn't work. I don't think streaming probably helped. But as a consequence, they're bust. So they're not producing anymore. Now, I think I paid about £60 for the Minder box set, £50 or £60. It's a great big thing. The series for me with Dennis Waterman are the only ones really worth watching, but there are 7 of them, and I think that there was plenty in each series. But I looked on Amazon the other day, they've still got them in stock, but they're like £120. So it's a lot more than I paid, but it's only going to go up because they're not producing any more of them. So unless you can get them on streaming and you're happy with that, then these sort of things, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet. I bought the talk radio film I paid £48 for that talk radio on Blu-ray. But it was limited to 3,000 copies worldwide. So it's only really going to go up. They're not going to make any more Blu-rays. Everything's moving to streaming. So let's... So anyway, that being said, I mentioned the YouTube video of the website, and so that'll be in the post for the show, along with the copy rhyming slang website link. And I hope you enjoy the episode as much as I did. There are a couple of people that, not just the regulars in the episode, but you've got the guy who died, sadly, was had a big drink problem that was followed by in the tabloid papers in the UK. He just drank himself to death. He ended up a policeman in the Bill called Tosh Lines, famous for his brown raincoat. And he's in the episode, plays a role in it. As does Gordon Kaye, best known as the lead actor in Hello, Hello, who played a very flustered sort of chap in that show. Certainly in no way one would consider him threatening. Whereas in this episode, Get Daily, he plays a tough guy. He's actually a fairly big chap as well, so he pulls it off rather well. Okay, so let's have our weekly look at the BBC Verify website and see if the BBC have verified whether or not a member of their team, Marianna Spring, lied on her CV, as the Daily Mail reported in their November the 20th, 2024 article entitled BBC's Truth Checking Unit Under Fire for quietly deleting statement after saying government was right about number of farmers to be hit by inheritance tax raid. So I'll just go over there. Now, let me see. Here it is. I've got a lot of links in here. So there it is, just there. Just opening that up. We scroll down until we see the latest updates in the middle of the website. And then we go down to whatever date follows on from... That's interesting. Follows on from what we covered last week. Okay, so last week... Well, that would have been about the 8th, wouldn't it? So, we've only got two. And for some reason, they've got the 11th at the top and the 13th below it, whereas all the others follow in chronological reverse order. So, the oldest one, Russian ships move from Syria base amid doubts over future. And then the most recent one, from the 13th, Syria in maps, who controls the country now Assad has gone. So there's the dip into the BBC Verify website. And I'll be including a link to the BBC Verify page in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. Okay, so now let me share with you the delights of being me in the last week, and it all focuses on food. Now, on Monday, I tend to go to a restaurant. They have a special offer on Monday. A lot of people don't go out on Monday. I know that because the restaurant is exactly what I want from a restaurant, okay? And what I want from a restaurant is I go in, they know what I want, they seat me down where I like to sit, they bring it over, I go and pay, I leave, and there's no one else in the restaurant. That's my ideal restaurant, okay? Now, they're not doing a Christmas menu or anything like that, because what happens with a lot of these places is if you've got like a special offer on the Monday, it'll get to December and they'll say, oh, that's all gone. And they'll put up these ridiculously pricey Christmas menus for all of December, and you have to wait until January to go back for the offer, lunch offer or whatever, to go on. And for someone who's single like me, if you had to get all these ingredients individually, well, it'd be very difficult not to get them to get them so small just to fill one plate, unless you're going to get some microwave meal with these different bits on it, which we know is going to be dreadful before we even, you know, consider purchasing it. It's actually the cheaper way to do it if you get the right place. So in I go, and I suddenly see it's all set out differently. And by the time I left, there were just loads of people in the place. And I'm trying to eat, and there's people stood up next to me. That's so annoying when someone's stood up next to you. Someone brushes a chair, it goes, bangs into my leg. You know, it just, I looked at it and that's it. That's enough for me. All right. I think I'll go back on like the 8th, something like that. The first one in January that's after the 1st, all right? few days after the first. This is not the most wonderful time of the year. It's the worst. January and February are the best, as no one is out because they've spent all their money on Christmas. That is what I'm looking forward to. Because, you know, people say, well, you're a Christian, you should. No, for me, I pray the same prayer every day. And it's important to me that I do that. And there are other things that I may do as well. But for these people, I would say a fraction. I would say if the percentage was in single figures of these people doing all this stuff because they believed in Jesus Christ or they wanted to honour Jesus Christ in some way, I would say that if that was in single percentage figures here in the UK, you'd be lucky. It's probably lower than that. It's just an excuse for having a, you know, get-togethers, presents and indulgences. It's got nothing really to do with Jesus Christ. And the other thing I was thinking recently, and I mean to run this by Peter. Now, how can I put this? The idea of the cross. I don't want to go down the Bill Hicks line, the satire on that, that, you know, if Jesus Christ came back, the cross would be the last thing that you want to see. But when you think about it, I remember Peter saying, because we were talking about Renaissance imagery, Renaissance art of Jesus Christ, and it tends to portray him as a rather slight, you know, weak-looking man. That seems to be how he's depicted. That's why I like the image that I use of him for the traditional Christian message, because as Peter says, you know, he was a carpenter. He was obviously a strong man and what have you. And I wonder if there are elements of people who use the cross and say that they're Christians using the cross, but they use it as a means of mocking Jesus Christ. Because, you know, that was the part of his life where that was how he was killed. I mean, how many other people in life do you celebrate by how they were killed? And obviously, I know you can't equate Jesus Christ to other people, but if you think of it in that way. So, and when I look at some people who... can I go there or can't I go there? Let's just say there are some people that become Catholics who would never become Protestants. A group of people that Jesus Christ condemned in the book of John chapter 8. When they ever do turn to Christianity, I've never known any of them turn to the Protestant faith. But I see them pop up in the Catholic Church. I see them pop up in the Russian Orthodox Church, but I've never seen any of them in the Protestant Church. And I find that very interesting. So it's just something that crossed my mind and made me think this morning about the cross and how I imagine that there are many people that use it in a... they believe it's a way to honour Jesus Christ. But I'm just floating the idea out there that do you think that there are some people who could be thinking, actually, this is a method by which we mock him, but we mock him even further by pretending we use it to honour him when we know how we really use it. And that was just a thought that came into my mind, which I wanted to share with you. Right, now this one is what I had written up. It was the only thing I was going to cover in this section of the show, but I don't want to gross anybody out. So let me... as you know, I generally go to my mum's house on a Wednesday. I stay over and I do work over there. But this week, I took Amanda to see her on the Tuesday instead. So I had the Wednesday free. Rather than have my corned beef sandwiches at my mother's, I treated myself to a takeaway mixed lamb doner and kofte kebab, lamb kofte, which I don't think you can get any other kofte actually, but that's beside the point, which due to its vast size took me a great deal of time to consume. Okay, so here's the difficult bit. Let me just say, I'd had this before and I was like, did I feel a bit funny afterwards? There was something not right. But it gets, oh, I'll go for it again, whatever, I'll come on, you know, just get it. I won't be getting it again. Let's just say my entire system afterwards seemed to lock up. And I woke up next morning and I actually still felt full. And I could still taste something on my breath, like I hadn't properly properly, my system hadn't done what it should do, and it seemed to have seized me up. And so I suddenly thought, well, now what does one do with this? And maybe I should go to the supermarket and get some fruit. I was going to say the greengrocers, but I've never seen a greengrocer in years, so I'd have to go to the supermarket. But then I suddenly realised that Wetherspoons had their curry club on the Thursday. And I thought, well, if I have a vindaloo, which is the hottest curry that they do, maybe that will shift it. In the end, I went for a madras, which is the second hottest one. And that did the trick without having to have fruit, which I haven't had fruit or vegetables in years. And I don't like to eat anything green, ladies and gentlemen, unless maybe it's a lime Tic Tac. But that being said, that was Thursday. And after recovering from that, I decided to go to Nando's on Friday. And that's a sort of chicken restaurant. And you go in and they sit you down with your table. I know what I'm having, so you have to go and order at the counter. So I'm stood in the queue. There's only about 3-4 people in the queue, something like that. And there's this woman there, young woman, sort of looks at me and smiles. So I was polite, I smiled back. And then, she started talking to me, and I was like, I just thought, typical. I could have done with this 30 years ago. Okay, so as of December the 1st, 2022, we have a total of 2,362 people having died after taking the fake vaccine and 474,018 people having been injured after taking the fake vaccine. These figures were published on the British government's website page entitled Coronavirus COVID-19 Vaccine Adverse Reactions and were aggregated from the totals of the 5 vaccine analysis prints linked to on that page. I say were because the British government are no longer publishing these, as whilst their website page still exists, the 5 vaccine analysis prints have now been deleted from it, so I have absolutely no idea of the official figures today. Drink of water time. Okay, so now it's time for this week's viruses and vaccines, in which I give you a rundown of all the health-related stories I've encountered in the past week. Here we go, folks. First up, Daily Mail. Shocking 4 in 5 limb amputations on the NHS are unnecessary, new research reveals. Then we've got the Daily Mail again. In fact, all of these look like the Daily Mail to me. Heart attack and stroke patients are told to get yourself to A&E. English version of the emergency room. Heart attack and stroke patients are told to get yourself to A&E after calling 999 amid rising demand for ambulances. 999 is the UK version of 911. I'm going to only tell you if the name of the publication, if it's not the Daily Mail, because all of these look like they are. As you know, I go through the Daily Mail every day, so unless I find something elsewhere and I'm looking, pretty much everything that I do comes from there. NHS urges people to have flu vaccinations so families are protected in time for Christmas. Then we've got classical violinist Nigel Kennedy feared his career was over when he went partly deaf for 3 months after COVID vaccine. That never affected Beethoven, did it? Then we've got, as cases surge in under 50s, map reveals England's cancer hotspots. So do you live in one? And the worst area is Devon, where I went to write in the name of Yahweh and the Synagogue of Satan updated, expanded and uncensored from 2010 to the start of 2012. Then we've got groundbreaking research suggests organ transplant patients are inheriting donors' memories and personalities. Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I never noticed any improvement in David Rockefeller's personality up to and including his 6th heart. New bowel cancer shock. Rates in England's under 50s among highest in the world amid global explosion of the disease in young people. Woman, 27, in disgustingly good shape, diagnosed with a terminal cancer on the rise in young people after putting her worrying symptom down to overeating. Yes, that's it. She overate herself into good shape. Next, cooking oils used by millions linked to cancer in second study in a week. Yes, that's it. I mean, weren't millions of people threatened with dismissal from their job if they did not use cooking oils in recent years? And finally, Daily Mail, hundreds of vials of deadly viruses have gone missing from a laboratory and scientists warn they could be weaponized. And this has taken place in Australia, so keep your eyes and ears open for any of you listening over there. Okay, next, while I was messing about in the Google Play Store on my phone the other day, I stumbled upon a free game called Sopranos Quiz, which I downloaded and was quite fun. After I answered over 200 questions, only three of which I got wrong, it justified my decision not to bother watching that again, as I just know it too well. And unlike something nice, such as Laurel and Hardy or Tom and Jerry, it is not something one wishes to experience too often. Okay, so now it's time for some of this week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall, which, as the Daily Mail is the most visited news website in the world, gives us an insight into what they, whoever they are, want us to be thinking and talking about. First up, conspiracy theories and extreme misogyny are in danger of becoming mainstream in the UK, report warns. Are they making a covert reference to the Tate brothers? Next, fury over plan to turn Nazi tunnels into world's largest luxury bunker for mega-rich elite who fear World War III. Next, astonishing moment, US pilgrim is found in Syria after spending 7 months in Assad's jails as he describes hearing torture. And here is a comment on the article from Mr. Rolex in the UK. Are a pilgrim on a pilgrimage for the CIA. He who would valiant be gainst all disaster, let him in constancy follow the master. There's no discouragement shall make him once relent his first avowed intent to be a pilgrim. Next, LGBT soldiers to be handed up to £70,000 each after being thrown out of the military due to their sexuality. Then we've got Germany loses patience with its million Syrians. Politicians on left and right say migrants celebrating the takeover by Islamists have no basis to stay here and suggest paying them to leave. Very curious timing there when you consider that Syria has just experienced regime change, something very common in that region of the world. Next, pictured the father of one found hanged day after he was shamed on social media for making racist gesture at football match and was due to be spoken to by police. Now, I've heard many content creators claim that these days people would prefer to be called a thief or a murderer than a racist. Sadly, it sounds like this guy not only proved that claim, but took it one fatal step further. Next, Lord Sachi finds love again with late wife's friend Lynn Forrester de Rothschild. Tory grandee, 78, reveals they connected after they were both widowed. Trainee firefighter who failed exam became a woman because the pass mark was lower and was successful. Now, when I joined, I think they're referring to a bleep test. So that's what it's called in the UK. And they put cones out with a distance between them. And you have to go from walk. When you start off on level one, that's like a walk, you know. So you have to get there in time of the beep and then get back in time of the beep. And then it goes to level two, level three, which gradually increases in speed. When I joined the police, it was either 7.1 or 8.1 you had to hit. And you had to do that to get in, and you had to do it while you were on your probation. But at some point, while I was on probation, when I had to get signed off for it, you only had to hit 5.4. Because what they'd done is that they had a lower level for women. They had to hit 5.4, and the men, I believe it was 7.1. But for equality and all that sort of thing, they couldn't bring it up. Because it wouldn't be fair on the women. So the only way they could do it to make everyone equal is to bring it down. So it was a cakewalk. I think I actually hit, it was level 12 point something, or maybe even 13. I got myself quite fit at one point, and I was really surprised at how I did it. I think it might have been at training school. I I did quite, you know, certainly on the fitness side of things, I remember really straight after that, I think that the guy at the force was quite surprised, because I was an older, one of the older people going in. There were a couple of people older than me. It was one, I think I was, what, 20? It was 2002, so I was 29, so I was nearly 30. There was a guy who was 40, stuff like that, but most of them were younger, and so they would, you know, tend to be faster and quicker than you, even at, you know, that age, because I wasn't someone who was doing a load of fitness and stuff like that. So that kind of jumped out at me, but that was out of Spain, that article, so don't think this is a UK thing, because I imagine that the firefighters have been equated as well. By my recollection, you had to hit a far higher level of fitness to be a firefighter than a policeman, certainly back in 2002 when I was sort of looking into this sort of information. Then we've got four men being dragged before court after likening the French First Lady to a paedophile. Trial set after malicious comments made about Brigitte Macron, who is 24 years older than her husband. And finally, Christian OnlyFans star Sophie Rain, 20, offered seven figures from adult companies to lose her virginity. Okay. So now it's time for our topic section, fagging. And to cover that, I'm going to read you the Wikipedia page on fagging. Here we go, folks. Fagging was a traditional practice in British public schools and also at many other boarding schools, whereby younger pupils were required to act as personal servants to the eldest boys. Although probably originating earlier, the first accounts of fagging appear in the late 17th century. Fagging sometimes involved physical abuse and or sexual abuse. Although lessening in severity over the centuries, the practice continued in some institutions until the end of the 20th century. Fagging originated as a structure for maintaining order in boarding schools when schoolmasters' authority was practically limited to the classroom. Thomas Arnold, headmaster of Rugby from 1828 to 1841, defined fagging as the power given by the authorities of the school to the sixth form to be exercised by them over younger boys. Fagging was a fully established system at St Paul's, Eton and Winchester in the 16th century. Fagging carried with it well-defined rights and duties on both sides. The senior, sometimes called the fag master, was the protector of his fags and responsible for their happiness and good conduct. In case of any problem outside the classroom, such as bullying or injustice, a junior boy's recourse was to him, not to a form master or housemaster, and, except in the gravest cases, all incidents were dealt with by the fag master on his own responsibility. The duties undertaken by fags, the time taken, and their general treatment varied widely. Each school had its own traditions and expectations. Until around 1900, a fag's duties would include such humble tasks as blacking boots, brushing clothes, and cooking breakfasts, and there was no limit as to hours the fag would be expected to work. Later, fagging was restricted to such tasks as running errands and bringing tea to the fag master's study. The 1911 Britannica details an evolution of the role at Eton. Under school rules, fagging might involve harsh discipline and corporal punishment when those were standard practices. In 1930, an inquest into the death of a 14-year-old schoolboy from Sedbergh School, then in West Yorkshire, heard that, rather than returning after holidays, he took his life because of his dislike of the fagging system. The jury returned a verdict of suicide and recommended the discontinuation of the practice in public schools. During the late 20th century, fagging became unfashionable in British public schools as attitudes to boarding education and child development changed. Despite the reluctance of senior boys who had served their time and expected to enjoy the benefits of the system, between the 1960s and 1980s, the duties first became less onerous, and then the system was abolished at most major public schools. The passing of the Children Act 1989 caused most British schools to ban the practice, and it is now obsolete in Britain. There is a history of fagging in schools in former British colonies such as India and South Africa, where fagging continues in a limited form at some schools. In 2017, the actor Simon Williams described how, as a new pupil at Harrow School in 1959, he was required to fag for a prefect 4 years his senior, involving duties such as spit shining his shoes, making his bed, serving tea, and even warming the toilet seat. Okay, so we've got 10 minutes until the hour. I'll probably finish this in less than that time. So for those of you on radiosoapbox.com, it'll give you the opportunity to get up and stretch your legs, get yourself a drink before the next show starts at 11 o'clock, which I believe is the RadioSoapbox.com flagship show with Rhea. It's 4 hours with different guests, etc. So I hope you're looking forward to that. Okay, now it's time for the news roundup of the week. Here we go, folks. First up, Daily Mail. Martin Freeman, 53, looks loved up with his French actress girlfriend Rachel Bonassa, 30, as they attend British Independent Film Awards in London. And here is a comment on the article from Lassick in the UK. "This taking my daughter out for the evening look is very dated now. Date within your age range. Double figure age gaps are too much for anyone." Next, BBC. Pink News bosses accused of sexual misconduct. And here are the first three paragraphs of the article. The couple who run Pink News, the world's largest LGBT news website, have been accused by staff of multiple incidents of sexual misconduct. Several former staff members told the BBC they saw Anthony James, a director at the UK-based company and husband of its founder, kissing and touching a junior colleague who they say appeared too drunk to consent. And more than 30 current and former members of staff said a culture of heavy drinking led to instances where founder Benjamin Cohen and his husband had behaved inappropriately towards younger male employees. Next, BBC. Canada euthanasia now accounts for nearly 1 in 20 deaths. Wow, what a surprise. It was only a few years ago that we were told gay couples should be allowed to enter civil partnerships as they weren't allowed to get married, to only a year ago getting this headline from the Daily Mail. Tampons and sanitary pads are being Tampons and sanitary pads are found being supplied in the men's toilets inside a Whitehall government department. So, as you know, we had the initial endorsement of assisted dying in the UK with all these so-called protections and conditions and all these different things. Well, where have we heard that before? And if your government legislates to kill you, what do you think they're really after doing? I think that many of us know who've been at the sharp end of governments and their so-called private institutions that they prosecute if they deny the services to a company that refuses to bake a cake for a gay couple, but they say that they're allowed to act as a private company when they're denying their services to somebody who writes books that they don't like. Next, Daily Mail. "I fell in love with a rapper I met on TikTok, but when I rejected his proposal, he killed my father. Now I'm scared he'll come for me and my kids." Now forget Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls. Here's the real deal, folks. When Kirandeep Sagar first met Ranjit Bharath, she was smitten. The mother of two had recently separated from her husband when she connected with the Canadian Punjabi rap star on TikTok in June 2023. They quickly struck up a rapport, and after a year of chatting online, he showed up at her home in Sydney, Australia, and the pair fell in love. But after just a couple of months, the relationship turned sour. Ranjit became obsessed with Kirandeep, who, not yet divorced, said she didn't want to marry him. Rather than deter Ranjit, this led to even more obsessive behaviour on his part, including threats to her family. Kirandeep eventually lodged a complaint to the Australian police, and Ranjit was deported. However, soon after Kiran Deep's father, Ravinderpal Singh, 78, was murdered in Punjab, India, with his body dumped in a bush. Ranjit is alleged to have texted Kiran Deep, apologising for killing her father, before berating her with daily texts threatening to kill her too. Next, Daily Mail. From Emma Watson to Tom Selleck, 10 stars who narrowly missed out on iconic movie roles that would have changed their career. And the most interesting parts of this article is apparently Tom Selleck was supposed to play Indiana Jones, but he couldn't get out of a television contract he had at the time. Presume that was for Magnum PI. And Al Pacino was supposed to play Han Solo, obviously in Star Wars, but he said he just didn't understand the film or the role, so he turned it down. Okay, and finally, a shout out to E. Michael Jones. Daily Mail headline. Catholic Church Social Club at war with neighbours over complaints of drug taking, loud music and members throwing up and urinating in the street. On that bombshell, you have been listening to The Limeys, episode 198, Fagging. The Limeys will be back with you next Sunday. I'll be back with you with Peter on Tuesday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week. And bye for now.